Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting just 2 days after the Catalonian Regional Parliament voted to declare independence. Hundreds of thousands of pro-Spanish protesters demonstrated in Barcelona. The crowds clapped, sang, and chanted through the city streets carrying red and yellow Spanish flags. Among the throngs, González Trova.
It's clear that they are not a majority and they don't care about us. They don't respect anything. And I say, we can be all in the same country, independentists, Spanish people, but you have to respect everyone, and they do not respect that.
Spanish Foreign Minister Afonso Dastis said Catalonia's deposed leader, Carles Puigdemont, would be allowed to run in December's new election unless he's imprisoned first. But he told the Associated Press Madrid firmly opposes independence.
I rule out full independence, but not necessarily more autonomy, even if they are now already one of the regions which with the highest powers and competences, not only in Spain, but in the world at large.
Madrid has temporarily stripped Catalonia of its autonomy until elections can be held December 21st. 3 days after an opposition boycotted presidential election rerun, Kenyan opposition leader Raila Odinga has demanded a new election within 90 days. Odinga accused the U.S. and other Western governments of being irresponsible for urging Thursday's repeat vote.
To them, they wanted any other election. See, as we are talking about credible elections, them, any election is okay. So they just wanted us to go there to become like a cannon fodder.
The vote counting is nearly complete. Election officials are uncertain how to handle some 25 constituencies where voting was blocked. President Uhuru Kenyatta was declared winner of the first election, annulled by the Supreme Court. This is VOA News. Iraqi Kurdish leader Masoud Barzani announced Sunday his intention to give up the post of president Wednesday following an independence referendum that he championed that left the northern Iraqi region isolated and on the defensive. Mr. Barzani rejected Parliament's decision to extend its rule for 8 months. He said he informed lawmakers it's not acceptable. Parliament meant to consider temporarily sharing presidential powers until new elections are held. Parliament in Erbil was stormed by armed protesters targeting lawmakers and journalists. The referendum was denounced by Baghdad as illegal. Its forces seized the city of Kirkuk from Kurdish forces. The two sides are currently engaged in a dialogue on the control of the Kurdistan region's border crossings, including the one involving a pipeline that carries oil exports into Turkey. U.S. and Israeli officials Sunday said the Israeli government, under U.S. pressure, has put off a vote to connect several West Bank settlements to Jerusalem. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu told his cabinet Sunday the Americans have inquired about the bill. Israel is talking with them and will coordinate with Washington. An Israeli lawmaker said there is U.S. pressure against annexation of West Bank land. A U.S. official said the U.S. is discouraging actions that will distract from Israeli-Palestinian peace negotiations. Several hundred took to the streets of Paris Sunday and other French cities in protest against sexual harassment and assault. The mostly female demonstrators waved placards bearing the hashtag MeToo used by women in the past 2 weeks to share accounts of sexual violence. The campaign began in the U.S. in the wake of allegations against movie producer Harvey Weinstein. At least five people have died as high winds knocked down trees, cut power, and created chaos in travel across Central Europe Sunday. Germany, the Czech Republic, and Poland were the hardest hit. The younger brother of former Burkina Faso President Blaise Compaoré has been arrested by French police in connection with the murder of a journalist. The unresolved 1998 killing of Norbert Zongo is seen as a symbol of repression in the Central African country under Mr. Compaoré's 27-year rule, which ended in 2014 following a popular uprising. François Compaoré was detained at the Charles de Gaulle Airport in Paris after arriving from Ivory Coast. Two women stranded aboard their storm-damaged sailboat on the Pacific Ocean for months docked Monday at an American naval base in Japan. The two had departed Hawaii May 3rd for an 18-day voyage to Tahiti. They were found last week about 1,500 kilometers southeast of Japan after being rescued by a U.S. Navy ship. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Monday, October 30th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Three Liberian political parties demand a new elections commission and accuse President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf of interference in the October 10th presidential election.
We are aware that long before the October 10, 2017 polls, President Sirleaf had invited election magistrates to her residence for a meeting. This act clearly amounted to interfering with the electoral process.
Wilma Pace, chair of the ruling Unity Party of Liberia. Meanwhile, George Weah's Coalition for Democratic Change says it is preparing for the November 7 runoff election. Political tensions remain high in parts of Kenya following Thursday's controversial election rerun. And Somalia sacks its police and intelligence chiefs following Saturday's Al-Shabaab attack.
Yesterday, we have had a Council of Ministers meeting, and we have agreed there must be an accountability, and we cannot allow our people to die without protection.
Abdi Rahman Omar Osman is Somalia's information minister. South Sudan President Salva Kiir is to visit Khartoum tomorrow, Tuesday, and Africa is urged to step up measles vaccination if it is to eliminate the disease by 2020. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Three political parties in Liberia Sunday accused President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf of interference in the country's October 10th presidential election. The parties are the ruling Unity Party, which presidential candidate includes incumbent Vice President Joseph Boakai. The other two parties are Charles Bramskin's Liberty Party and Benoni Urie's All Liberian Party. In a statement Sunday, the parties accused President Sirleaf of having a meeting with election magistrates prior to the October 10th election, something they say amounted to interference with the electoral process. Here is Wilma Pei, chairman of the ruling Unity Party of Liberia.
We are aware that long before the October 10, 2017 polls, President Sirleaf had invited election magistrates to her residence for a meeting, which is unprecedented in election history. Our respective political parties maintain that this act clearly amounted to interference with the electoral process and had no legal basis or justification whatsoever. The president's conduct was an act of intimidation and inducement, especially since some commissioners of the National Elections Commission have warned Chairman Kokoya against election magistrates meeting President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf. None of us had the slightest thought that a president who was democratically elected twice will endeavor to create this call. After 17 decades as a sovereign country, this is not what Liberia and its people deserve from a president so disprivileged.
That was Wilma Pei, chairman of the ruling Unity Party of Liberia. President Sirleaf's office was not immediately available for comment, but the Elections Commission says it will hold a news conference later today, Monday. The three political parties have also called for the appointment of a new elections commission because they say the current commission, chaired by Jerome Kokoya, is incapable of conducting a free, fair, and transparent presidential runoff election, which is scheduled for November 7th this year. The parties cited what they say were anomalies in the October 10th first round presidential election, including widespread and systematic fraud, incompetence, inefficiencies, and deliberate actions and actions by the Elections Commission, which they say prevented thousands of Liberians from voting. Here once again is Wilma Pei, national chairman of the ruling Unity Party of Liberia.
We reaffirm our stated solidarity with the Liberty Party and all other political parties and candidates that feel offended and have strong reasons to believe that the October 10, 2017 polls were characterized by massive systematic irregularities and fraud. In furtherance of this solidarity, and also considering the overwhelming evidence of fraud that continues to emerge, our respective political parties have resolved to pursue this matter to a logical legal conclusion as quickly as permissible under Liberian law. The views of Liberians, as expressed through their votes on October 10, 2017, which we now realize were not reflected in the announced results, cannot be taken for granted. The growing report of buried ballot papers being unearthed in Grand Jira County and several locations across the country cannot be understated. The National Elections Commission, headed by Chairman Jerome Kokoya and President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, has lost its credibility and public confidence. The National Elections Commission cannot conduct any free, fair, and transparent presidential election runoff in the wake of increasing and disturbing reports of alleged massive fraud. There has to be a credible process in order for there to be a credible outcome.
That was Wilmer Pei, chairman of the ruling Unity Party of Liberia, speaking Sunday during a news conference in Monrovia. In Liberia, football legend George Weah's Coalition for Democratic Change, the CDC, says it is making preparations for the November 7th presidential election runoff. This comes after three political parties, including the ruling Unity Party, Sunday called for the appointment of a new elections commission because they say the current commission is incapable of conducting a free, fair, and transparent runoff election. Toga McIntosh is national campaign chairman for WEAS Coalition for Democratic Change. He says there are processes put in place to handle electoral complaints.
We are in our gear. In other words, we are making sure that we'll be ready on that day, fully ready. So we do what is necessary, keeping our base alive, making some inroads in some of the areas that we didn't do too well. So, yes, we are in the ready mood. And on that particular day, we will be ready.
I'm sure you are aware of the development on Sunday. The three political parties, the ruling Unity Party, All Liberian Party of Mr. Ure, and then Liberty Party of Charles Bramskin, they are calling for a replacement of the Elections Commission.
Well, you know, they must have some reasons, but I personally do not put those reasons to that level. It's not just the only first thing they've done, they've tried various issues. So they're calling for removal is just one of those critical issues they try to grab onto. But the process tells itself. So personally, let's see how that goes. So I think we have a process. We have a democratic process. The two candidates that emerge first and second prepare themselves and go in the runoff. And I think it was not the first thing we heard. They were talking about issues that had to do with tampering. I think they must be falling short on that. So now they must have the reasons for the chairman to be relieved on his portfolio.
They mentioned anomalies in the election, what they call widespread and systematic fraud and other actions on the part of the National Elections Commission.
Look, there are rules and regulations around here. You start an election process. You go into the counting. You do not raise any issue at that. Now you see the results. And on the basis of the results, you begin to try to pick up these issues. So as far as I'm concerned, those irregularities, they have the process here. You have to go to the Election Commission, Arbitrary Board of Arbitration, rather, and let the process take its course. Go there and demonstrate what you term irregularities. And if they rise to the occasion, I'm sure those are white men and women there. And if you're not satisfied, you would go to the court. These are processes and systems. We, in the coalition, we're just watching. We know some declaration has been made. November 7 is the runoff. And what we intend to do is to prepare ourselves for that day.
Ambassador McIntosh, thank you very much again. So nice to talk with you on Daybreak Africa.
Thank you very much, my dear brother.
Ambassador Toga McIntosh is National Campaign Chair for George Weah's Coalition for Democratic Change. He was speaking with me from the Liberian capital, Monrovia. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today's Monday, October 30th. Daybreak Africa time is 14 minutes past the hour. Kenyan opposition leader Raila Odinga is demanding a new presidential election within 90 days, saying the country is in grave danger from political violence. Odinga spoke to the Associated Press 3 days after he boycotted Thursday's rerun of the August election. Odinga called Thursday's vote invalid because President Uhuru Kenyatta faced no opposition. Meanwhile, tension remains high in a remote village in western Kenya after the body of an elderly man was discovered Sunday on a sugarcane farm. Mohamed Yusu reports for VOA from Koguta, Kenya. The death comes a day after high government officials visited the area to calm ethnic tension.
A body of an elderly man lies on the ground outside Kuguta village, surrounded by angry men armed with spears, machete, bows and arrows. They are angry about the killing. The death of the man came a day after two communities promised to end the hostilities caused by months of political uncertainty. Kuguta sits between the Kalenjin community that supports President Uhuru Kenyatta and the Luo community that is loyal to opposition leader Raila Odinga. The brother of the victim says enemies are trying to push the Luo off their ancestral land. They do not want us here. This is where I was born, and my father was born here. These people came here just the other day. They have not even been here for 3 years. They are the ones who have killed my brother. The two communities have fought over land and politics for years. This latest tension and political volatility grows out of the disputed presidential vote and weekly political protests have further damaged relations between the Luo and Kalenjin community. During the October 26 election, 10% of polling stations were closed due to demonstrations that worried electoral officials. About 35% of voters participated in the rerun election, compared to an 80% turnout in August. Less than a kilometer away from the sugarcane farm where the body lies, a group of youth from the Kalenjin community, armed with machete, bows and arrows, watch. The armed youth told VOA their neighbors have been blocking roads in political protest, making their lives difficult and making them miss their chance to vote on Thursday. A local area leader, Maureen Otiang, says the killing must stop.
We do not want any more Luo dying. In the name of insecurity, in the name of voting, we have a right.
If
they want peace, let them give us peace. Enough is enough. We are tired.
The latest anger between the two communities reignites intercommunal fighting of 2007 and 2008 following a disputed presidential election. Then more than 1,300 people died and hundreds of thousands fled from their homes. Julius Genga is an area lawmaker.
We want to tell the security agencies it is upon them to keep law and order, and we will maintain and preach peace. But peace can only go to an extent where there is justice. We want justice to be meted on the people of Kuguta. They will not be butchered again.
Police have called on the community not to seek revenge and vowed action against people who commit violence. Mohammed Yusuf for VOA News, Kuguta, Kenya.
The Somali government Sunday sacked its police and intelligence chiefs following Saturday's Al-Shabaab attack on a hotel in the capital Mogadishu that left at least 27 people dead. Information Minister Abdi Rahman Omar Osman confirmed the dismissal, saying the two security agencies should have known and prevented the attack.
First of all, our thoughts and prayers are the victims of Saturday's attack in Mogadishu, where we have lost 27 people and a number of injured people. We are still mourning, but our security forces were very quick to respond, and people are now receiving treatment in hospitals in Mogadishu.
Minister, what can you tell us about the sacking, the dismissal of your intelligence chief and your police commissioner?
Yesterday, we have had a Council of Ministers meeting where we have discussed greatly about the security situation in the country. And we have agreed there must be an accountability, and we cannot allow our people to die without protection. And therefore, after the debate and discussion, we have agreed the police commissioner and the chief of intelligence of Somalia, both of them were responsible directly about the security in the area.
By sacking the chief of security, intelligence and the police, is this an admission that there's a problem in the security?
No, this is clearly shows that our leader is really accountable to the people. They have trusted in those chief of intelligence and the police commissioner to the security of the country in order to protect our people. So now is the time for security forces need to take responsibility of what happened, and we cannot allow our people to be killed by terrorists, even though we are doing a very good job in terms of stabilizing the country. But our president and our prime minister are really adamant that accountability must be number one priority, and our citizens need to be protected at all times.
Even if the Somali government had the best of security, do you think it's possible to suppress the kind of attacks that Al-Shabaab has been attacking your country?
Absolutely, there's no doubt. Somalis are resilient people. Our security forces are brave enough They have been fighting a terrorist group for the last 10 years. They are in front lines day and night, and without getting appropriate resources and enablers for them to do their job. Furthermore, we have African forces who are assisting our Somali National Army. As you are aware, we are winning the war militarily, but terrorists have changed their tactics to assimilate warfare, where they are planting bombs in the civilian areas, and those people who want to die, them, it's difficult to really contain. But what we agreed is that we need to intensify the war against terrorists. That's why our president visited the neighboring countries, so that they support the military operation in order for us to win the war against terrorists.
Abdirahman Omar Osman, Somalia's information minister, was speaking with me from the capital, Mogadishu. South Sudan President Salva Kiir is expected to visit neighboring Sudan on Tuesday. Atain Wakatain is spokesperson for President Kiir.
The president and the accompanying delegation will be traveling to Khartoum to revitalize the agreements that were signed between Sudan and South Sudan on the 27th of September 2012. And those nine cooperation agreements have not been all implemented, so they have to be revitalized, you know, on the basis of bilateral relation between Sudan and South Sudan.
When you talk about revitalization, would this include the Abyei region?
At the moment, it might not include the Abyei, because this visit came as a result of the presidential advisor on security that preceded the visit of the president to Khartoum. And when he met with the authorities in Khartoum, he requested that the next phase of the meeting should be between the two presidents, on bilateral basis. And therefore, it is now the turn for the president to travel to Khartoum and meet his counterpart, Omar al-Bashir.
Now, your government has said that the 2015 peace agreement is being implemented. First of all, will this 2015 peace agreement be discussed in Khartoum?
Sudan is already part of the IGAD, and Khartoum does not have parallel peace process apart from the revitalization of peace agreement that all the IGAD countries has agreed to see and to oversee.
Atain Wakatain, the spokesperson for South Sudan President Salva Kiir, was speaking with me from the capital, Juba. Two international health organizations have called on Africa to step up measles vaccination efforts for the continent to achieve its goal of eliminating the disease by 2020. Sebastian Mofu has more from VOA.
The report called Progress Towards Regional Measles Elimination Worldwide 2000 to 2016, which was done by the World Health Organization and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, revealed an 84% drop of measles-related deaths over the past 16 years. James Goodison, an epidemiologist at the CDC, is one of the corresponding authors of the report. He comments on the estimated 90,000 deaths from measles recorded last year, compared to more than 500,000 in year 2000.
This is quite an impressive achievement that's been made through increasing vaccination coverage around the world. And while this progress is quite impressive, the world still has a way to go. Immunization coverage rates with the first of two required doses of measles vaccine has stalled at around 85% since 2009. And this is well short of the target of 95% coverage we aim for to stop measles infections.
The report indicated that measles immunization rate was around 85% against the target of 95% to stop the infection of the highly contagious viral disease and to make the possibility of freeing the world of measles a reality. Goodison, a senior measles scientist at the CDC, fears Africa might not achieve its self-set goal of eliminating measles by year 2020.
African countries and their partners need to act urgently to raise the visibility of this goal to achieve measles elimination. Also, the Polio Eradication Initiative has supported efforts to achieve measles elimination in the region. And so once polio has been eradicated, it's important that those resources are still maintained to achieve measles elimination as well.
Sebastian Mofu for VOA News.
It's 25 minutes past the hour time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. Good morning to you, Samson.
A very good Monday morning to you, James. We begin Daybreak Africa Sports with the latest Africa sports news. And I have some sport analysts with me this morning. Deji Ogembo, Ferdinand Ubom, Alfred Sariki and Akila Matawa. Let's begin with the CAF Champions League, where Al Ahly were forced to a 1-1 home draw by Wydad Casablanca. Ahead of the return leg, what do you make of the game yesterday?
Yeah, a big shot for Wydad Casablanca. Now, last time they won the trophy was way back in 1992. And they gave Al Ahly a run for their money yesterday at the Borg El Arab Stadium. We all thought it was going to be a roller coaster for the team of the century in Africa, talking about Al Ahly. But for Casablanca, it's been a really good tournament for them, and I think they want to cap it off by winning the trophy next week too.
But a lot of people disagree and say that with the record of Al Ahly, they should have bring out their very best.
Going for the second leg, they will definitely have to come out, and that will make Casablanca be on the defensive rather. So I will still probably say I'll see that match ending in a draw.
All right, it's turned out to be a North African affair. Does that reflect the state of African football, that the North Africans are actually setting the pace for the other regions of Africa to, you know, follow?
Well, of course, they are taking over. Look at the CAF Champions League winners in the past. For Al Ahly, they have won 8 times. They are looking for their 9th title. At the moment, talk of Club Africain, Wydad Casablanca, all these are North African teams, and they have, you know, been at the forefront talking about African football.
All right, $2.5 million is the prize money.
Yeah, well, $2.5 million, I don't think is good enough.
All right, let's look at the biggest talking points this past weekend, and which is boxing. You have Cameroon-born French boxer Carlos Takam, who says he wants a rematch with International Boxing Federation and World Boxing Association heavyweight champion Nigerian-born British boxer Anthony Joshua. Takam was defeated in the 10th round of the World Heavyweight title fight on Saturday, but the controversy is the fact that referee stopped it. What do you guys make of it?
You know, the rules keep on changing. Takam really wanted to continue, and he really, really gave a good account of himself. But that bout, it was symbolic in several ways. Number one, the rivalry between two of Africa's greatest sporting rivalry, Cameroon and Nigeria, you know, was in it again. And for Africa, it's symbolic for the fact that that bout happened on the same day that we had the Rumble in the Jungle bout in Zaire, in Kinshasa, Zaire, between Muhammad Ali and George Foreman. That was in 1974.
What actually caught my fancy was the fact that Takam, who was unknown, came with a lot of bravery. It's the new invention to the rule now. It's a thin line. We don't know whether we should cross it or we should just stay in it.
In athletics news, Shaura Kitata Tola of Ethiopia and Kenya's Vivian Cheruiyot won the top prizes at the 36th edition of the Menova Frankfurt Marathon and IWAF Gold Label Road Race on Sunday. Shaura Kitata chopped almost 2 minutes off his personal best in difficult conditions in the men's race, clocking 2 hours 5 minutes 50 seconds, while Kenya's Vivian Cheruiyot, the reigning Olympic 5000 meters champion who is now concentrating on road racing, improved her best to 2 hours 23 minutes 35 seconds. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good day. And that is it for this Monday, October 30th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer Greg Burns, I'm James Botte in Washington, wishing you in Africa a very, very productive week.
Interested in deeper analysis of news and events in Africa? Then plan to join me, Douglas Impuga, on Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll have African journalists and expert guests discuss the topic at hand. We take a deeper look at important African news topics. So plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, Africa. This is Peter Clotty, host of VOA's Africa Weekend show, Nightline Africa. Tune in. You will be glad you did.
Nightline Africa is a fast-paced, tightly edited news show designed to keep our listeners engaged from beginning to end. Nightline comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies: 6080 kilohertz, 49.3 meter band, and 15580 kilohertz, 19.2 meter band.